That's Thievery Corporation's The Numbers Game. It's from their 2008 album, Radio Retaliation, featuring Funkmaster Chuck Brown, who launched the go-go sound and beat in Washington, D.C. in the mid-1970s. It swept the nation. He's done a lot of great things to elevate people's political consciousness. One of his biggest hits was with the Soul Searchers, We the People. Chuck Brown died on May the 16th, 2012, at the age of 75, but remains a much-loved local legend, and a national one, too, to this very day. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee. It is Friday, August the 14th, 2015. And it's time to clear some space in your head. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. You know the order of the day. It is to express your thoughts about current issues and perhaps introduce us to brand new ideas or ideas on which you have an entirely different perspective that is worth sharing, ideas that as that are worth further exploration and discussion and debate. And you can do that at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This is, in my view, a very necessary component of the work we have to do to build consciousness and to build a constituency and to build independent critical thought out there to help people connect things and see how systems work and what is their role and where is their place in the scheme of things. But it all starts with information. And information is not just a solo practice. Information is about exchanging ideas, talking with other people, learning from them. And in some cases, learning new things from them. Hopefully, that's going to be the nature of the exchange. So it is very important to maintain this vital part of our work, to encourage the interplay, the interaction, the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. It doesn't matter whether people agree or disagree with you. What matters most is that you can substantiate your point of view and you can give us an appreciation. We will have an appreciation of what went into your point of view, what went into your thought process. We all come through this business of life seeing the world through the prisms that have shaped our lives and our worldview. And in that sense, everybody's opinion is perfectly legitimate. Now, whether it is logical or not, that's up to discussion. However, the integrity of a person's opinion has to be respected, whether you agree or disagree. And that's the beauty, I think, of the dialogues we've been having. We have the ability to appreciate that what we are hearing is also the story of the individual journey through life. And people acquire information sometimes the very hard way. People acquire information and knowledge based on the experiences that they have. And we don't have exact duplication of experiences. And this is the beauty of the thing. So, all of that said, let's get to talking and let's get to some reflection on issues that are current. This is not just talking for talking's sake. We are educating each other, so the educational component is what should dominate in our discussions on Free Your Mind Fridays. 888-874-4888. We get started in Berkeley with Harvey on the air. Hello, Harvey. Is Harvey on the air?
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Okay, there you go.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Very good. Wonderful day today. Well, I'm trying to think really big here today, Eutrice. And the way I see it is that we're caught between two forces. Humanity and all life is caught between two forces, creation and destruction. And we negotiate, and life is what we negotiate in between those two forces. And I think that each one is armed with different ways, some to create, like that would be romance and love, create that creates people, and it's part of the creation process. And like war and prejudice, that's part of the destruction process. And I think that hatred is actually a virus of the mind, and it's just as lethal as any physical virus. And if you look at over time, how many people have been killed on the planet because they're hated by other people? It's just the numbers are in the hundreds of millions, so it's extremely lethal. And I think what we need here is a what I call a flash consciousness change, a one of appreciation over hatred. And I think appreciation is the antidote to the deadly virus of hate. And we should try to see each other as a blessing, not a curse. And that would help us with this virus. That would be the inoculation against the virus of hatred. And so that's what I'm trying to see here, is that in a sense we're vulnerable to creation and destruction, but to try to be aware of it and to see hatred for what it really is, a lethal virus of the mind.
Well, is it just that, or is it also a byproduct of an engineered virus of the mind, where you have systems of governance, we call them governments, that create the societies and create the rules by which we live, create the attitudes that are shaped by those rules, and create the systems that enforce those attitudes and those rules? So, whereas you are raising this question as individual choice and by extension, the collective choice of like-minded individuals, people who are likely to think along the path that you have just discussed, how do we basically encourage the governments, those systems of governance all around the world, to do exactly that?
Well, I think that we're united in our fear of the planet going down. It's a new way of, the internet has brought us to a new vision of the world and each other. And I think riding on that, plus it's a very complex question, but in a sense we're dealing with an adolescent planet. Adolescence in reflection of the way it operates in terms of hatred of each other for such banal things as skin color or who knows what, sexual orientation. These are all very adolescent in nature. So we need a force that's going to help us grow up. I think the internet is uniting us in seeing each other in a more intellectual way and getting beyond just the physicalness of being different, seeing the other as the other. Also, as we're heading into space, if we encounter the true other, which would be an extraterrestrial life form different from us, then, you know, if we can't live with each other here, if we fight over such minuscule differences, then how are we going to treat the other? And also, I think we're trashing the big gift. The big gift was variety is the spice of life. That everything being different to maintain our interest, if we were all the same, if we looked the same, had the same thoughts, it would be very boring very fast. So in a sense we're really trashing the creation, and I think on all levels that's signs of adolescence. So we need to grow up and protect ourselves against the virus of hate, which we read about in the paper every day. You know, the outcome of that, the deadly outcome of that. And so that's why I'm calling on a new flash consciousness change toward appreciation instead of hatred.
Thank you so much for getting us started today and on such a positive note. Thanks so much, Hari.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
New York is next, and Joel, our educator, is up. Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Yucrece. How are you?
Joe? Fine, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, and like all of you, I'm commenting on what a beautiful day it is in New York City. I was a little wary about calling today because I called yesterday, and I'm very interested in hearing what other people have to say, so I'll make it relatively quick. I've been thinking about the election in a kind of disinterested sense. Yesterday I mentioned the fact that one has to be somewhat disinterested just to maintain one's sanity. But I've been thinking about the Democrats over the past 50 years and how they've changed. And it seems to me that the Democrats are in a kind of death embrace with neoliberalism. And this has gone almost unchallenged since the rise of Jimmy Carter, since Carter was elected president in 76. And the grip seems to tighten with each successive election. And now it seems to me with this election coming up, it has all but strangled the life out of the party. The victims of neoliberalism once constituted the Democrats' popular base. Now the party, it seems, has become a kind of tomb for its ancient New Deal factions, and all the hedge fund dark money in the world isn't going to summon the old troops back to life. And in their place, the mandarins, I guess you can call them, of the Democratic National Committee have welcomed some of the most malign forces on the American political scene, such as bond traders, venture capitalists, dot-com tycoons, arms manufacturers, a whole, assortment of them, private equity sharks, union-busting CEOs, nuclear energy zealots, and last but not least, the shock troops of the Israel lobby. It seems to me that we've officially entered the age of surreal politics. And even though the word inequality rarely surfaces anymore, it's almost an inviolate rule of American politics that all elections, when you really drill deep into the demographic strata, are about the economy. And the economy, it remains entropic. The heat steadily leaking away. The mood of the nation is sour. The country is mired. It seems to me in a kind of slow-motion dissolution. So the contradictions of the party have reached a cracking point. I mean, who can defend a party which refuses to defend its most vulnerable adherents? Who would defend a party that squelches each new spark of idealist fervor, whether from, the Occupy movement to Black Lives Matters, while maniacally pursuing such job, killing trade pacts like the TPP? It seems to me that the party should be torn asunder before it collapses from its own internal state of decay. And Obama, as the embodiment of the party, offered himself as an outsider, a new kind of, a political figure who would challenge the prevailing forces of corporate thievery and military adventurism. And in the end, he proved to be their unapologetic agent. And that, then, I think, is the tragedy of the party and the personal tragedy of Obama. He was a president who couldn't stand his ground. So, like Harvey, I'm an optimist. He's about to leave.
Really? You're an optimist?
Let a new resistance begin. That's what I say.
Well, you know my position about, parties. They have ceased since so long ago to serve a useful purpose. It's all a charade. And the constituencies on which, especially the Democratic Party, because it at least in recent years, has been touted as a friend of the working class, it ought to be punished severely. It ought to be dealt a lethal blow by those constituencies so habitually betrayed by it. And if only we can get a movement that says, we're done with this party. It's finished. We're done. We're out. We're done with elections, the charade. We're done with the whole thing. If only we can have a movement that says we will vote, but our vote is a popular vote of no confidence in this entire electoral system. It stinks. We want no part of it. That would be a pleasant wake-up call, I think, to this structure of politics that we are swamped with all the time, that we keep going back to the same old boxes. and we keep fulfilling our same old more.
And, you know, as I've been saying on your program to the point of redundancy, the only way change can really come is through popular movements. We need a united front. We all need to get together, and we need to recognize that the politics of justice and peace is a holistic politics, and that those of us who are preoccupied with ecological destruction also need to be occupied with racial equality and international justice. And we all need to get together and transcend our own parochial needs and recognize that there is a collective front that is absolutely necessary, because these other people are going down. They have a lot of power. They're going down, unfortunately. They control things, and they're going to bring us down with them. So we've got to do this out of necessity.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your call today.
You're welcome. Have a very nice weekend.
Thank you. From Chicago, Henry, how are you in Chicago?
Hey, Yatrice, how you doing?
Good. What's going on in Chi-Town?
Well, you know, I guess Chi-Town is Chi-Town, but this past week, you know, you know, listening to your show, you got me thinking about a lot of things in regards to, you know, politics and the media. And, you know, the one thing that I've been thinking about was, you know, political media propaganda, you know, which I kind of summed up, you know, what you've been talking about, you know, most of the week in regards to Donald Trump. Because, you know, in the last election, you know, when he was considering running for president, you know, most of America considered it a joke. But now it's all of a sudden he's like the favorite for the Republican, you know, nomination. And, you know, we all have to put this in the question on how did he become a joke one election cycle, and now he's like the favorite to become the Republican nominee for it. So, you know, I thought about, you know, a lot of things that you had said over the, you know, over the past couple of days and weeks about it. And, you know, I come to the conclusion that, you know, mass media propaganda has really, really been one of the biggest entities that has kept, you know, the progressive, you know, movement down, or the true progressive movement down. Because, you know, as most people say, you know, the media is the fourth arm of the military. You know, this is basically military style tactics here of propaganda, which mm-hmm. basically sways the public into thinking, you know, one thing instead of, you know, truly thinking how they can be truly free and liberated. I mean, you know, they make us think that we have a free choice in voting, but, you know, most of our decisions aren't, you know, due to free choice. It's basically because of conditioning. Because, you know, if they condition us to keep seeing this person over and over and over again, next thing you know, we're going to be thinking like, okay, you know, this guy may be right, even though he might be telling you a lie, you know. I can't think of the guy who said this, and I know I should know this, but if you keep repeating a lie over and over again, pretty soon it's going to be the truth. I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. and I can't remember who said it, but, you know, sometimes that basically comes to fruition when it comes to mass media. Because, you know, if you keep blasting this person over the airwaves, keep telling you the same thing, and, you know, and one of the things that I thought about was the recent Chicago mayoral election, and how political campaigning over mass media is so. I'll say this: the one thing about I've seen about politics or campaigning over mass media is the more negativity you have in your campaign ad, the better your chances of winning a modern day election. Because I was thinking about the mayoral election and how I saw, like, Rahm's ads and even Chewy's ads, how they were talking about their opponents and how they weren't doing this for the people. Well, the question I had was, okay, what are you in particular going to do for the people, you know? And one of the things that really stuck out for me, and in regards to media propaganda, is how the message of, and this is in terms of the Chicago mayoral election, is how the message got out amongst black voters on how Chuy García, who was the candidate who lost to Rahm Emanuel, was going to turn Chicago into, you know, a New Mexico, or he's going, you know, this basically the theory, that the ridiculous theory I said of, you know, fear of a brown city, and how Chuy is going to give all his Mexican friends all the jobs and not any black folks. So it basically swayed a lot of black voters not to vote, you know, that day, and how media propaganda basically took over. So it's a very interesting thing that I've been thinking about, and how do we, as a people, or as a progressive people, overcome that? Because, you know, mass media has been co-opted by corporations, and it's almost impossible to get, you know, to get our message out there.
Mass media is, you know, these are mass corporations. These are conglomerates. There are media conglomerations going on at a rapid speed at this time. You know, when you look at the media holdings, and they have different ways of it. They have media in terms of television. They have cable. They've got social networks. They've got magazines, newspapers, all under one roof. So in ways that we haven't seen for a long time, I would say probably we've never seen it at this point, where you can say there was a book about seven media organizations basically dominating knowledge and control of information in the world. This is how vast the holdings and how far the reach and the power that these media organizations have. But we started out, Harvey started out the discussion today talking about the virus of hate. The virus of hate is what has fueled the orientation of this country. It has thrived on the virus of hate. It has carefully cultivated it, entrenched it, reinforced it. And so it is as American as you can get, hate, which is why, in one way or the other, Donald Trump's very hateful, negative attitudes and conduct are resonating with a huge swath of people who would swear to you that they're very nice people. But he has very carefully calculated where to hit America and how to come at Americans to just, I mean, like I said, in just 6 weeks, the man went from zero to 100 miles an hour, and he's top of the heap right now. So hate is a very, very important asset here in this society. But I want to ask you something, Henry. You listened all week, and especially in terms of the media. Did you make the connection between these billions of dollars that are coming down the pipe and the behavior of the media in terms of the coverage that it is giving this particular presidential race?
Well, I guess in my sense, yeah, a lot of this is basically about money, you know. But at the same time, and I was thinking about that as well. But at the same time, I'm thinking there's another overlying mission behind the media to basically. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I was hoping I would get my thoughts out very clearly today.
No, you're doing great. The media have hijacked. They've hijacked the democratic process. They're in full cooperation with the hijackers of democracy. They've decided that you are not capable of making up your mind. We'll feed you what you need to know in order to influence your decisions, and then we could call that democracy. But they're part of the problem.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I said before, because of the fact that, you know, we think we're thinking on our own free will, but they're just basically conditioning us, you know, and condition is not basically freedom. But what's also scary is it's not just TV and radio and music. they're hijacking academia as well, you know, in regards to, you know, our history. Because I know about a couple of months ago, there was a seminar talking about, and you probably know about this, about a particular book Manny Marable did about Malcolm X a couple of years ago. And how much, you know,
I have problems
garbage
with
and
the
trash
book, but that's okay.
that book displayed about, you know, how Malcolm X was this and Malcolm X was that. And so, you know, we were talking about how even our history in books are being hijacked. You know, our history is being hijacked. We're supposed to, you know, most of us, you know, revere Malcolm X as a strong black man, but this book is looking to take him down, you know, about three or four notches, you know, from that particular image that we all had of Malcolm X.
I just told you I have problems with the book, and I knew Manny Marable, but in the world of academia, you have again the people who have any power or any access to those communities and constituencies that, from the point of view of the elite, need to be controlled. They will co-opt them. They will see to it that they fulfill the mission, which is to keep everybody in check. So in the world of academia, for example, you would find that professors who would be left-leaning or professors who are more open-minded and more vocal and more accurate, really, would be considered problematic. They will be denied tenure. They will be denied all kinds of benefits that they should enjoy. And they would be hounded out. I've seen it over and over again. And by the way, this is not just in white institutions. This is in black colleges, too. So we
have this
relationship. We talk about anybody in a position to influence people who should expect to be attacked. No question about it. Thanks, Henry, for your call today. I'm glad to hear from you. Thanks so much for contributing. Let's go to Los Angeles next, and DX is waiting to share his profound thoughts. DX, are you there?
Hello?
Hello? Yes, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you today? Good morning from California.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've been doing a lot of thinking this week as well. And I think
you
what
too.
I'm about to... Excuse me?
I said not you, too.
Hello?
Doing a lot of this thinking.
Yes, yes. Me too. I think what I'm about to bring to the discussion is going to connect in nicely with the conversation that you and Henry from Chicago just had. I've been thinking a lot about a different type of media, and I wanted to just talk a little bit about this because it's very misunderstood. We have a situation that's going on right now with, and it's been going on a while with hip-hop and rap music, where it's the most demeaning, the lowest level of music ever put out in by blacks, for blacks, and other races. And I was thinking about how did it get this way? I was thinking back to when I came of age back in the late 80s and early 90s and how the most popular rap was different. First of all, I like to say that rap music has always been sort of a kind of a mixed bag of diversified artists and things like that. But what's most prominent right now is this ignorant rap. I call it ignorant, where they focus on, you know, sex, drugs, cars, you know, things like that, and look at how much my money I got, look at my mansion, this and that. And I was thinking to myself, how did we go from the conscious rap days of the early 90s to what we have now? Well, first of all, the rap back in the rap industry back in the late 80s and early 90s consisted of different kinds of rap. It wasn't just all conscious rap. Of course, you had your party rappers like Big Daddy Kane, Fat Boys, EPMD, Kid and Play. You had your female rappers who were kind of conscious, maybe some not, like Yo-Yo, MC Light, Moni Love, A Lady of Rage, and Queen Latifah. You had even gangster rap. You had people like Too Short. You had Ghetto Boys. You had Ice-T, N.W.A., Niggas with Attitude. So you had different kinds of rap. But the rap that was most in the forefront and was most prominent was a type of rap that was a conscious rap that was letting you know, first of all, that here is your place in the system and something's wrong here and we need to do something about it. In other words, what I call it was kind of a slow rolling rebellion that the young people, including myself at that time, were in on, and we all knew about it, and we all learned not only, like I indicated before, what our place in the system was and how that's wrong and how the system's doing us, but also what's going. It was a means of communication from one neighborhood to the next neighborhood, letting us know what's going on. So there were groups like Public Enemy, of course, the most prominent one. You had Boogie Down Productions with KRS-One. You had people like X-Clan, you know, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, and those type of groups who were letting people know, you know, things. So I wanted to just highlight for people who may not have experienced this, because it was a really, really great time for me in music, period. I wanted to just read a couple of lyrics real quick for people who may not have experienced this, because there's a lot of people who don't understand how this came about, but by the way, the system immediately went about co-opting and you know, just corrupting it and eventually putting it on the back burner, and it eventually led to where we are today. But one of the groups I mentioned was Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, and this is one of the first songs I remember. I was only about 11 years old. I believe this song is 1982, but they had a song called The Message. And, you know, just a little, few of the lyrics, broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stairs, you know, they just don't care. I can't take the smell, I can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with a baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far because a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. And, of course, the famous hook on the chorus is, don't push me because I'm close to the edge.
Close to the edge.
I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes you wonder how you keep from going under. Right. See, that's a pretty deep song compared to what we have today, the junk we have today.
Let me ask you.
I alluded to another group a minute ago, Public Enemy, and one of their most famous songs was called Fight the Power, and it was featured in a movie called Do the Right Thing, a Spike Lee movie. I know you know that.
Sure.
So just a couple of lyrics from there. From the heart, it's a start, a work of art. To revolutionize, make a change, nothing strange. People, we are the same. No, we're not the same because we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? My beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defensive fitness. Bum rush the show. You got to go for what you know. Make everybody see in order to fight the powers that be. And the famous hook is fight the power. You got to fight the powers that be. So there, they're telling you we have to revolutionize, make ourselves aware. I think if this message was still prominent out there and had been ever since then, it would have been we'd have a whole different situation right now than we have right now, because too many young people are not and little older people around my age group in their 40s are not aware, and they're not conscious of things. So let's move on. There's one of my favorite female rappers,
as Queen Latifah, I mentioned her before. She had a very prominent and famous song called UNITY, Unity, where she's talking about not disrespecting a black woman and not calling her a B or a H, you know. So some of those lyrics, instinct leads me to another flow. Every time I hear a brother call a girl a B or, you know, trying to make a sister feel low, you know, all of that got to go. Now, everybody knows there's exceptions to this rule. Now, don't be getting mad when we're playing. It's cool. But don't be calling me out my name. I bring wrath to those who disrespect me like a dame. You know, and to me, some of that's lost because you have actual black women, young black women, listening to this stuff we have today where they're being called B's and H's, and they accept it like it's cool. And I've, you know, my partying days are over, but several years ago, I used to go out to clubs and things like that and hang out with my friends, and I would hear women on the dance floor reciting lyrics that were demeaning them. And I started thinking to myself, how did we get here? You know, like that old Talking Heads song, how did I, you know, and so the last one I want to talk about is one of my favorite rappers who's no longer with us. He's deceased.
DX?
It'll be quick.
We have a whole bunch of people in queue waiting to get on. So could you? I said we have a bunch of people waiting in queue.
So
could you give us a summary?
Excuse me?
So could you summarize?
Well, yes, okay. Well, I wanted to just summarize, you know, using Tupac's lyrics. He had a song called Dear Mama where he gives praise to his mom, and he says, even as a crack fiend mama, you always was a black queen mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it. There is no way I can pay you back, but the plan is to show you that I understand and you are appreciated. So, you know, I'm just trying to, what my thing is that just like the conversation that you and Henry had, I'm trying to show how the media, these major corporations and the record corporations, have basically subdued the movement, co-opted it, and put it on the back burner. And everything they have out in the front is all this gratuitous rap that really means nothing in your life and doesn't educate you, and that was done on purpose.
Of course,
they had
but it
stifle,
also was done
get,
with,
get
the,
of the
with the consent and participation of people who could have made a choice, but made the choice in terms of money and fame as opposed to the art and the purpose of the art. Thanks so much for your call
Absolutely.
Today, DX. Let's go to Brooklyn and talk with Patricia. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure you can hear me. Well, Ms. Lee, first things first, I've been listening to your show all week, and for the last couple of days, you were talking about the debate in the women's League of Women Voters. So I found that to be interesting. So I just wanted to do a little follow-up on my own, how the debates how they set up now under this new commission of presidential debate. I believe
yes.
it's the name of the organization that has the debates now.
Well,
so
actually,
just doing a little brief research.
They kind of left it up to the media to figure it out themselves and set their own rules.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, you know, as you when you put something out there, I follow through with it. And following through with it, it's interesting. It's interesting how the Democratic Party and the Republican Party is the parent group of the Commission of Presidential Debate.
Absolutely.
Once again, the bird with the two wings is headmaster of the whole debate.
Yes.
Interesting.
I thought so.
If you look at the on their website, they, you know, they have a little thing about their history. And some guy named Frank, I might be messing his last name up, but I believe it's Frank J. Farrenkopf Jr. and Michael McCurry are the chair and the co-chair of this commission. And it goes on to say, supposedly, this is the debates are designed to promote substantive dialogue before, during, and between the debate about major issues of the day. They will permit citizens and candidates to come prepared for a series of voter education forums that inform and engage the public. Now, if that's not a bare-faced lie, considering the last debate and the people who they had on the debate, there are no engaging issues that they were talking about, especially with the head ringmaster of the whole circus led by the leading clown, Donald Trump. That couldn't be further from the truth, engaging the public in serious, there's nothing serious about that, nothing whatsoever. But then I looked at the League of Women Voters, and you're right when you said that they said they would not engage in perpetrating a fraud on the citizens. Nancy Newman at the time, who was in fact, I believe she was the chair of the president of the American League of Women Voters, a memorandum came to her, and the memorandum was based on self-serving demands from the Democrat and Republican Party as which her organization, who had a long run with these debates, would not be part of. And now what we have now are being perpetrated as engaging. It's nothing engaging on these debates whatsoever, considering that the duopoly is in fact controlling it, and they went so far on to say they will not have any third party a part of it. So if the American public is really interested in diversity, there's no diversity. It's the Democratic Republicans, and it's the Democrats and the Republicans who are controlling this whole thing, and the media is in fact the ones who are in fact the underwriting of this whole commission of presidential debate, considering that they're the main financial sponsors of it. So I just wanted the audience, your audience, when you bring that out, I just want your audience to understand, if they read somewhere and they followed up on and think that the media is controlling this whole thing in regards to these debates.
Well, I am very impressed that you followed through and that you were able to corroborate what we were discussing this week at the farce of these debates. But really, what binds them all together in as a cabal of shared interests is money and power.
Money, exactly. It's money. You're 100%. It's the whole money issue. As a matter of fact, one of the things is, let me just, now that you said money, I got one other little piece that which was actually tied this whole thing in. And it was dealing with the matter of, the, when you say about the money, they go on to say that these debates are the most widely watched political programs of any time. You know, they want to cash in on that.
Sure.
They want to cash in on that.
I like your analysis.
Cash in on that.
I mean, you bring it down to the bare essentials. That's what it is. That's what it is. And that's what I've been trying to communicate, that you have to have your guard on in this time, because it's a massive, massive manipulation of the mind that is going on here. Manipulating people into thinking this is a democratic process.
He has to understand too, and I hope he's listening.
You know,
that music industry is only controlled by the same media. They have all their hands and all the subsidiary. They only control it all. The electronic press, the printing press, the media mongrels, it's all up underneath their umbrella. You'd be like you said, you know, seven major groups only control all of this globally. So from your printing press to your electronic press to the music industry to the radio stations you're listening to, they own and control all of that. But one other thing, and I'm going to leave on this note. When you talked about academia and as far as the Black United Negro College Fund, well, Michael Lomax was just with his hat in hand over there at the Koch Brothers last week. So if you understand that the Black media and the Black academic and the Black Negro colleges, if he has to go to the Koch Brothers to get the money, you can understand where those academies are headed, because they're going to definitely implement their programs in those colleges.
Well, thank you for your call today and for putting us back where we need to be on point on these issues. Thanks so much for your call today, Patrika. Thank you. We're still in Brooklyn. David, you're on the air.
Yes. Early on, someone did mention that if you tell a lie long enough, it turns into truth. I believe it was Goebbels that said that. And so I just want to bring that up. The other point I want to mention is that can we say that we really have democracy in this country, the United States of America? Because the way I see it, corporate capitalism and democracy go together like oil and water. They just don't mix. I mean, how are you going to have democracy? And my understanding is that democracy represents supposedly government of and by and for the people, when the whole place is run by oligarchs and plutocrats who control everything. The only thing they let some people do is do a little voting. And now they're cutting back on that with the voter identification laws and the gerrymandering and all the other techniques they have of eliminating some people. So, you know, I feel that the term democracy is often used very loosely. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's a word that I hear all the time, but where's democracy when you have a ruling elite that controls these elections and controls the people in office and even the Negroes in high places, the ones that get positions? They have to be approved by those people in power and the oligarchy and whatnot before they can get anywhere. So what I'm saying is that people ought to consider, not thinking of everything being democracy there, because I don't see this as a democracy at all.
Well, some time ago, I had a discussion about democracy, and I laid out the idea that it has very little to do with voting. And voting has very little to do with democracy. The way we really should measure democracy is to look at the quality and frequency of access that individuals in a society have to strategic resources. That's democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with voting. So mm-hmm. In a society where you have so many people who do not have food or shelter, so many people who have abysmal education for their children, so many people who are unemployed, these are all strategic resources of a society.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the ability to show that in this so-called, quote, democratic society you have, that people have reasonably equal access to the resources, then you just destroy any argument that you are living in a democratic society. We should never really align this word democracy with voting. voting is simply a mechanism to install a system of government. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
If in a town you need one dog catcher, one cat catcher, and one rat catcher to keep the town going, well, then you have elections to elect the dog catcher, rat catcher, and cat catcher. And that would install a government. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it has mm-hmm. nothing to do with your being able to access the basics that the entire world recognizes as human rights. Right to housing, they now call it food security. We used to call it starvation and hunger. You have a right to have some kind of a shelter, a decent place to live. You have a right to expect that your children can attend schools that actually do educate. You have a right to be safe in your neighborhoods, especially from the police officers and the abuse of power. You have a right to these things. So these are internationally held by accord. These are the underpinnings of democracy. So we should learn, we have to re-educate ourselves to disabuse ourselves of the notion that democracy has to do with voting and voting has to do with democracy. Absolutely not.
I think that in the black community here, many people get involved in capitalist parties, specifically the Democrat Party, and think there's a route to what is good for the people going through the enemy's party. I mean, there's no way that I see that you're going to achieve those things you spoke about by going through the mechanism of the two capitalist parties that control the country. It doesn't make sense to me. And also, when the Constitution was figured out, it wasn't put into place with the idea that there would really be democracy. I think those people that wrote the Constitution were afraid of democracy.
They didn't want it. They wanted it for themselves, which is a whole other thing. That's it. In other words, they formed the first oligarchy, and then they tried to make it to market it as a democracy. But
exactly.
Democracy really has very little to do with voting. And we should always be able to remember that you have to separate the two things. Democracy, you measure it by what is the access that you have and everybody has. Do we have relatively equal access to the strategic resources of our society? And if not, then this is not a democratic society. You know, all those pretensions could go right through the window. Thanks
exactly.
so much for your call today, David. I enjoy talking with you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it was useful and that it provoked you to do some thinking. Really, I enjoy it. And this is what we ought to be doing, talking to each other and creating a flow of information back and forth so we can kind of bounce ideas around a bit. So thank you all for offering your best today as usual. Keep it right here. Coming up next, the Lifeboat Hour with Carolyn Baker. And I want to let you know what a pleasure and a great privilege it always is for me to be in your company. I thank you so much for maintaining the high standard of the program and for offering with great confidence your very, very intimate thoughts for public inspection. Thank you so much. It's a very brave thing to do. And the fact that you do it is a testament, I think, to the integrity of the program and all who are drawn to it and participate in it. Until then, know that it's a great pleasure and a greater privilege for me to be in your esteemed company. Have yourselves a great weekend. Connect with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.